Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are the only show that will provide you with the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. And we are still sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org as well as republicreview.org. And you can tell by me just getting into that, I do not have the time to necessarily cover all the dialogue. The fact of the matter is, there are people that are out fighting for liberty. I was invited to one rally in the local area, but because they wanted to do it when I air my show, I was unable to do it. But for the most part, it seems like there's just not enough. And actually, I saw a business that was a barbershop. I think it was in Washington, Snohomish, Washington, where the customers lined up around the block, violating their social distance and everything else, basically just to patronage the particular establishment that was bold enough to defy the lockdown orders. The fact of the matter is there needs to be some lawsuits. And as a matter of fact, there needs to be class action lawsuits going after all of these folks. There also needs to be grand jury investigations going after all these public servants who have stolen your liberty. I am probably the most dangerous person on the air because I am the one that actually is pointing out that these people are violating the 14th Amendment Section 3. They are supporting rebellion against the Constitution. This is what's going on. And so they are no longer qualified to be able to serve as public servants. So anyway, I've already done the recap. You know what's coming up. As far as content goes, the next time we cover content, it will be the Tory Acts. I just want you to understand, when I cover the Constitution, I point out all the time that we have an enumerated Constitution, not a general Constitution. The big difference between a general and an enumerated, general grants general powers. It means the government can do basically whatever they think is best to govern us in those ways. An enumerated means that they have only these powers delegated, and these are the only powers that they can exercise. This is why we have the Constitution we have to protect us, to create these checks and balances so that we don't necessarily have government running amok and doing things it has no business doing. This is also why compliance to the Constitution is first and foremost. Anybody out there that's promoting any other thing, if they're promoting education and trying to not that education isn't important, but understanding that the Constitution is a compact and compliance to the compact needs to be first and foremost. It is paramount. These other organizations that just, they want to sell you stuff, but they're not telling you anything regarding all of these unconstitutional powers. They're basically promoting the status quo. They are dangerous. Any organization that is promoting status quo is just as equally as dangerous as the convention of folks or convention of state folks are. We don't need a convention. We do not need an amendment. We need full compliance to the Constitution. I can't emphasize that enough. Period. That is it. So what happens when you're out and you're trying to enforce the Constitution and you come into a conflict? You come into a conflict that the state law is permitting certain things like restrictions on the Second Amendment. Well, the Second Amendment can't be restricted by the federal government or by the state. So the state is ultimately, their laws are violating the 14th Amendment and the Second Amendment, not just the Second Amendment. You have to understand, states are equally bound now by the individual privileges and immunities that are covered by the Constitution. When I say the Constitution, that means all of the ratified amendments as well as constitutionally ratified treaties. if there is a treaty that actually is within their scope that has affected some change to certain things of their enumerated powers, you know, such as the militia. If they have a treaty that the militia will actually support, you know, the provinces of, you know, British Columbia, Nova Scotia, or what have you, then, you know, then we incorporate that. But only constitutionally ratified treaties. In other words, a treaty that has been ratified by the Senate, but is not a a power that they actually have that they can surrender, then they have, it's an unconstitutional treaty. A good example of that would be a treaty with the UN that would restrict people from being able to buy, manufacture ammo, guns, or anything like that. Any type of treaty like that, it would be a violation of the Senate to be able to pass that law, and it's a violation for them to pass a treaty as well. It's, the treaty was not a mechanism, and unless you can prove evidence that the framers intended on using treaties as a backdoor to taking away our liberties, which you won't find, then a treaty has to be in compliance with those very specific enumerated powers, and they have to be within those. And who cares about foreign trade other than the fact that that actually has an impact? But we should not be making treaties with communist countries and sanctioning trade with these countries. We should never have gotten into bed and going to, you know, business with Canada. Another one. Where in the Constitution does the federal government have the enumerated power to allow foreign nations and or foreign corporations or even foreign citizens to buying American land, buying American corporations, or anything like that? Did they amend the Constitution to grant them this power? Then they have no authority over this. So all this land and all this property that the federal government has allowed China and any other investors to come in and buy, they don't have the authority to let that happen. That power was never delegated. Do you understand this? So people are getting all up in arms about what's going on in Texas and the fact that the Chinese are doing a multi-billion dollar deal and buying some Texas wells. Hey, they don't have, whoever is doing it, not even the state has the authority to sell to foreign nations. It shouldn't be in the Constitution. It wouldn't be in the Constitution. Find it in the Constitution, and then we'll have that conversation. But you won't find it, and at least I'm pretty confident. I don't know. I do not know Texas's. I do not know Texas's Constitution that well, but I'm almost positive that they do not allow foreign investors to come in and buy and take full ownership of property. You have to be a U.S. citizen, period. And the fact that they've allowed, oh, well, this is good because we've allowed foreign investment into America. No, I'm sorry. It's one thing that we have multinational corporations. In other words, there's a presence in America that we, you know, do these mergers. That's one thing. But when it comes to real property, you know, such as the owning of a hotel, the owning of land, sorry, that is not available for foreigners to actually own, because it would have been considered by, there's no way the framers would have ever considered that, because Britain would have came in and bought America outright. That would be oxymoron. It would be defeatist. It would be a direct conflict from our own individual sovereignty, as well as our state sovereignty, as well as our national sovereignty. So what do you do about enforcement? How do we enforce the Constitution? And I'm just kind of going over the enumerated Constitution. There's only one mechanism of enforcement, my friends, only one. So when you read articles, regardless of who's the author, if they're talking about, you know, we have to have federal enforcement, and they're not including the militia as the mechanism for enforcing, then they're blowing smoke up you know where. And the bottom line is, only the militia has the authority in the Constitution to enforce those laws. And the militia will not enforce laws in non In other words, in a state that they're not a militia for. And that's why we have state militias. There's no need to go and grab the Massachusetts militia to go and enforce laws in Oregon. Oregon has its own militia, and they will be, and that's the checks and balances. That's how you actually have this litmus test. Is this really constitutional? Am I going to actually point a gun at my family and say, you've got to do this? Unless it actually is constitutional. Whether we like it or not, if it's constitutional, we will enforce. And 9 times out of 10, I can't even understand why any member of the militia would not enforce those things that are within the enumerated powers of the Constitution, that the federal government has the authority and can make laws as necessary and proper anyway. So that's kind of, the important things that we need to understand regarding the enumerated Constitution. Now, we also have and delegate power. This is very, very important. We delegate power down to the county level. And so G. Edward Griffin is kind of making this comment regarding sheriffs actually being given powers by the voters, because the sheriff has a responsibility to what? To enforce the laws. But what law supersedes what law? Bottom line, the state cannot pass a law that violates the Constitution. So G. Edward Griffin reported, and this is what's in the Need to Know News. And by the way, I do not cover all the Need to Know News. I only cover highlights. So you really need to sign up for G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News, so that way you can actually, get abreast with what the heck else is going on out there that GR is not covering. We got a hard break, and we'll be right back covering these sheriffs that are supporting the Constitution. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so as I said before going into break, that G. Edward Griffin is covering some sheriffs that are in Washington State. And there are others around the union that are actually starting to take a stand. And that's a good sign because they understand that liberties are being taken. The problem is sheriffs don't necessarily fully understand the Constitution because they have been convinced, just like most Americans, that, oh, it's this maze of laws and we need lawyers to figure out whether we're violating the Constitution or not. Anyway, we're coming, I don't want to say we're coming to the rescue, but we're coming to work with these sheriffs. We're trying to get sheriffs to understand the simplicity of the Constitution. And that if it doesn't make sense, it's probably unconstitutional. But this is what G. Edward Griffin just reported. Sheriffs are now given power by voters, and that is where their loyalty should lie. The sheriffs of Snohomish, Okanagan, and Walla Walla counties take the declared pandemic seriously, but stop short of enforcing actions that violate the constitutional rights of citizens. Most law enforcement officers do not want to arrest people who are trying to earn an honest living and trying to put food on their table for their families without a court order. The governor has no authority over sheriffs or their deputies. Snohomish County Sheriff Adam Fortney posted a letter on Facebook stating, and we actually saw even a better statement out of Maine. We have the right to peaceably assemble. We have the right to keep and bear arms, and we have the right to attend church service of any denomination. The impacts of COVID-19 no longer warrant the suspension of our constitutional rights. They never warranted, just to be clear, they never warranted that, because they have to declare martial law and deploy the militia. And with no militia, you cannot declare martial law. Those are Madison's words, not GR's. So, as I've said, when there's a conflict of the narrative, whether that be we're out here, we're doing this to, you know, save lives, or we're out here doing this to save jobs, you have to look at this from both perspectives. There is responsible legislation. I'm not just championing GR's solution, but the fact of the matter is the government does have a responsibility to try to protect lives. But doing a lockdown on everybody is not only draconian, it's unconstitutional. It is within the constitutional boundaries to actually tell people that you should just self-quarantine. If you cannot self-quarantine, then you need to come in to a facility, to a doctor, and we will find the place for you to actually, you know, obtain the care that you need while you are sick with either the flu or anything like that. This just doesn't stop with coronavirus. I mean, people die of the flu, and you are actually causing people harm when you go out in the public with the flu. We need a paradigm shift here. This herd mentality, you know, we want this herd immunity system. That's okay. Most people can, you know, quarantine in place and stay home if you get the symptoms and you come down with it. But the fact that just going out there and giving it to everybody is not, that can't be acceptable anymore. Not when people can die. When people can die, then there's a consequence to you having no care and having a cavalier attitude to go out and affect people. I truly believe that we do need these types of laws. I think that that is government's role. And in an enlightened society, there has to be a true, and I just don't want to say a happy medium, a true alliance to the fundamental principles of our government. That individual privileges and immunities just cannot be suspended. But those who can cause harm, whether you like it or not, health freedom anarchists, they can cause harm. Somebody can die. And if you want to go back to the herd mentality, then I believe that, you know, if you're a parent, if somebody gets sick because somebody went out and actually got other people sick when they knew that they had the symptoms, then you should sue them. And they should be able to have to, you know, cough up the cost of a loss of life, whatever that is. You know, either that or you go to jail. But there, we have to at least start covering the economic impact. I've always believed that somebody needs to pay the economic impact. What if that's a, you know, a struggling family and the father, you know, working around the house? He quarantines himself. He doesn't go out and get anybody else sick. But he doesn't get the needed care that he should have. He gets pneumonia and dies. That's an economic impact that he's put upon his own family. Now, there's no lawsuit. The wife can't sue the husband. But when it comes down to somebody infecting you, then we actually have a tangible, you know, ability, and we should have a legal ability to be able to hold people accountable. If we're a nation of laws and rules of laws, then we need to start implementing things that actually make sense. Another thing that really kind of infuriated me over this whole thing, and I may be digressing on a tangent here, I do understand that testing and statistics are being used to cause fear and to basically engulf people in panic. The way they're presenting data is erroneous. There needs to be a pure breakdown because they're hiding details of the deaths and everybody contracting this and so forth. How many deaths of people are admitted to a facility because of the virus? In other words, here's a person that was out in the open that actually got coronavirus from somebody, and then they went to the hospital and got admitted and then died. Then that person actually died from the coronavirus. What about those people that got cross-contaminated? And in other words, because had they been isolated so that they wouldn't have gotten contaminated because they're in a medical facility, would they have died? No. They were murdered because they were exposed either knowingly or unknowingly. And so we allowed some of our most vulnerable to get exposed and get killed. But they cannot be accounted as a coronavirus death. It might be a murder, but not somebody that actually came down with it was because they got, exposed to it. They were exposed unwillingly. They're in a facility thinking that they're going to be safe. And when their care provider comes in, because it's not a hospital, this could be a retirement home, or it could be a convalescent facility for, people with broken hips and so forth. I mean, there are lots of facilities like that because hospitals and insurance are not going to pay a hospital bill for somebody to convalesce. They put them in a less expensive type of facility. Well, if those facilities don't have safeguards, then bottom line, then they wrongfully exposed these folks to this virus or allowed these people who should have been protected to be exposed, then, there's a problem. But that should not count as a true coronavirus. Here's a person that is just susceptible and has been wrongfully exposed. So they're hiding these types of details. And so we need to actually start understanding, who and where these people are that were dying. Because if you were not admitted into a medical facility for coronavirus, but you died from it, then the chances are you died because you were there and that's how you got exposed to it. Had you been home, you probably would not have had that problem. We have the ability to actually determine how these deaths are going and is this a legitimate coronavirus death or is this a legitimate murder because somebody was exposed? The other thing is, and we've been on the record, I've actually put it out there weeks ago, that there was a design and an effort to actually cause this pandemic from the World Bank, from the Rockefellers, and all the rest of the data we've put out. There's no doubt that this is a man-made virus. There's no doubt that this is. And as a matter of fact, if there is evidence that this virus is not man-made, it would already be out. They would already show the cases of all these dead bats. The question is, why would China be wanting to save dead bat or save a bat community when bats are just like they're like rats with wings? Very few bats actually provide a viable economic and, advantage of letting them, survive in where you live. They're just like rats. Anyway, they carry germs and so forth. I doubt that any evidence will come out. And as a matter of fact, I'll even say this, that as we move forward, getting more and more evidence regarding the people behind this and so forth, this will actually play out as one of the biggest nefarious acts against humanity that's all a part of the globalization of communism. And it's really that simple, folks. And I'm not trying to create fear and panic, which would be combining those two words would be like peer. But I'm not trying to create peer in combining those two words. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to help illuminate the fact that we need to start holding people accountable. We'll get into this because we're going to be going into a break in just 5 seconds. We're going to get into this because we're going to actually, J. Edward Griffin exposes Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and others. And when we get to that point, I'm actually going to put it on the table as what we need to do. Again, we're about solutions here. We're not about just complaining. We're not just about pointing the fingers. And we already know who's evil and who's good. But we actually have, and I think that this coming year, 2021, needs to be a year of new types of laws to going after these folks. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So on the heels of my breaking down the fact that they're hiding information, the way they're reporting everything, it only stands to reason that they're trying to make and inflate the numbers as high as possible, because this is all about control. There has never been in the history of mankind a lockdown of all citizens, suspending, especially in the United States, suspending your constitutional rights over an ailment, over a sickness. And so G. Edward Griffin points out that James O'Keefe, and we kind of talked about James O'Keefe going out to the hospitals and so forth, but this is what he's uncovered so far, as well as what he's done at the hospital, finding that the hospitals aren't operating at capacity. They are, actually it's being exposed that they are being underrun. And I know that's a case here as well. They're looking and going, where's all the cases? Where's this pandemic? The people that are dying are those who have already been admitted into health facilities, nursing facilities, or what have you, and they're being exposed. Anyway, James O'Keefe of Project Veritas, according to G. Edward Griffin, spoke to several funeral directors in New York who say the number of reported COVID-19 deaths is greatly exaggerated and that no one is testing. Funeral director Michael Lanza said that it was his opinion that the New York City mayor, Bill de Blasio, is looking for federal funding, and the more COVID death certificates they can create, the more funeral funds they receive. You got to understand that it's some the shills on the bottom end of this whole problem are out to make money. And on the other side, those who are inflicting this, it's all about control. It's not about saving lives. It's not about saving jobs. Like I've said, it's all about control. Now, those who want to go back to work, they're just ignoring. That's the only reason I brought that up. It's really not about saving jobs, because we do have to give government, they've already got some legitimate powers, and they should be exercising legitimate powers, not illegitimate powers. And that was the whole point of all of that. And so this whole report basically supports this premise, this concept that we are in the throes of being misinformed. And this is all about power. There is also this concept, and you're hearing this more and more, about food shortages. Food shortages will not be driven by the farmers, or I should say more appropriately, American farmers. Anybody that is showing you video footage and pictures of onions being plowed under, or tomato or potatoes just being piled up into a pile of in a ditch that they're going to, you know, cover, that's not in America. There is no potatoes that have been harvested that I'm aware of, or onions to that degree, in America. Harvest season is coming up. We've got a few months to go, and as far as I know, the farmers are out planting. Now, there is dumping of milk, because you don't just turn the cows off from producing milk. Once you get a cow into the cycle of producing milk, there is a process. And with the regular school system, they actually start weaning the cows and slowly bringing them out of pumping milk, because when school ends, there's far less need for milk, because the government isn't buying it. What do kids do in the middle of the summertime? They become obviously milk impoverished, because kids do not get the same amount of milk because they're not producing the same amount. Somebody's not getting it. And we look at milk as a, you know, wow, that's really important. But is it really that important? I mean, I think it's important to the dairy farmers, because they make a lot of money by producing milk. And the more production or the more consumption, the more money they can make, especially with the economy of scale, or, you know, the profits that you can make via the economy of scale. So anyway, I'm not seeing America actually being the culprits in starving America. And here's the interesting thing. If you look at the meat and what's going on in the meat packers has always been a problem. If you talk to anybody on the production side, in other words, those who are growing cattle, sheep, chickens, and the rest of them, anybody that's on the production side will tell you that it's the meat packers that have created a monopoly and control. And it's not like the prices. When the prices go up dramatically, the people who make the windfall in profits is always the meat packers. If you start reading the articles regarding, you know, those who are producing beef, those who are producing chickens and so forth, you will find that, you know, they're the ones that always get the short end of the stick regarding profits and so forth. But they're the ones that take the greatest risks. Right? Because they could lose all of their chickens due to a bird flu or a swine flu, killing all your pigs, and mad cow disease and so forth. So they take all the risks, but they're not making that kind of money. And the reason that the meat packers is so politically connected, or I should say the reason they're so powerful and they're in this position of making all this money, is because they've been protected, because they have been, well, who is it? So probably unions, and they've colluded with government in creating these protections so that you can only buy meat from a legitimate certified meat packer system instead of being able to buy it directly from the farmer. Now, I'm here to tell you, you may not know how to butcher your own chicken, but when times get tough, you may need to start downloading videos that you may need to know how to, you know, how to start raising rabbits and how to slaughter them and how to, you know, properly dispose of, you know, the entrails and, you know, how to tan the hides if you want to sell rabbit pelts or what have you. But if you remember during the 80s, and as a matter of fact, I think it was that that bleeding heart liberal pig, Moore. Yeah, that's what it was. It was Moore. He did this thing about Flint, Michigan, and how the people were so economically devastated that there were people that used to work in car plants that started raising rabbits and started, you know, doing things just to make money because, you know, once the money left, once there was no employer that was feeding the town with all that money, well, then everybody was affected. The stores were affected and so forth. And so people were resorting to growing their own food and actually raising, you know, enough to actually sell. That's how people were just getting by, just surviving. So when I tell you that you may want to have some of these videos of for survival mode, that's, you know, probably one of the smartest things you could do is to download those things and have those. Now, you may be one of those kids, or you may have that younger mentality of, well, it's everything streamable. What if all of a sudden you don't have the internet? And the reason you may not have the internet is because you can't afford it, or because they've regulated you out, or what have you. There may be a reason why you do not even want that connection anymore. But you need the data. You need to have access to that data. Question is, do you have the ability to download and have that type of stuff? This just comes down to fundamental 101 being, you know, prepared and basic preparedness. Something I should have included when I had that special episode a little while back. And note to self, I'll make sure I add this type of stuff too. Because if you're in a pinch and the only mechanism of you feeding yourself is by, you know, raising rabbits and or your livestock and growing your own food, you better know how to do that, or at least have some good instructional videos to help you and documents or what have you for proper pruning of your fruit trees, for what you need to do to actually form your grapevine so that your grapes actually produce better. There's work in some of this. This is not rocket science, but these are forgotten, what do you want to call them? Skills. Yeah, they're basic skills, but they're forgotten skills because we've become interdependent on other people doing things for us. And my point is that, you know, we may have to rely more on the American farmer or on our own farming as well. Buying tools that you may be able to use and be able to do things with just to, you know, do basic stuff instead of hiring a contractor to do things, because getting things done in the future may actually require that you actually get a splinter, you doing the work yourself. So just some tips, because this is not just a one-time thing. They're going to try to do this again. And unless people start waking up, unless we actually stop this, if we have Republic Review, then we don't have to worry about this. But I'm having this feeling in my gut that we're not going to get there. We may be lucky to educate enough legislators that might actually protect us, that might put us out, but I don't know if we will ever get there to where we get the federal government into compliance. I don't know. I do know that that is the only mechanism that will allow us to flourish once again as a nation. But if we do not exercise Republic Review, then there's going to be a lot of people that are going to need to figure out how to do the basic survival stuff, unless you want to just go along with the globalist enslavement which is going to be probably inflicted upon you whether you like it or not, unless you actually move to a place and live somewhere where you can actually get away with living a little bit more independent and not being, you know, integral in the globalist scheme. But those things will roll out to you. We will be right back after these two promos. We've got a hard break, so please stay tuned, and we'll have more with J. Edward Griffin regarding farming right after this.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. This show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so now this hopefully this makes sense, because what I just told you about American farmers, about there is no American produce that is being tilled under. We haven't, it's not harvest season. We don't harvest in springtime. This is when we plant and sow our seeds. And so G. Edward Griffin now, I just want to give you they set the stage, and now I'm going to read this article for you. G. Edward Griffin reports that governments are ignoring the breakdown of the food supply chains under the COVID-19 lockdown. Food used to move from farmers to consumers, but now distribution is consolidated, which we've talked about, the meat packers and so forth. Almost all meat in the United States is produced on factory farms called concentrated agricultural feeding organizations. The three largest meat producing conglomerates in the U.S. control more than 2/3 the total meat and poultry supplies of the United States. Now, the majority of the meat that you consume, if you live in New York, if you live in these big urban areas, Los Angeles, your meat is likely coming from these concentrated agricultural feeding organizations. If you live out in the country and you buy your food from either a mom and pop grocery store or a smaller food chain or a food chain like Albertsons that actually buys produce locally, that buys meat and so forth locally, then you're probably less susceptible to these 2/3 conglomerates that are controlling the meat supply. Now, this is the meat supply, right? So the meat supply, they're harvesting and they're packing, and they have special seasons where they actually, you know, like right now is when the meat packers would probably be very busy getting ready by slaughtering and prepping a lot of meat for you to fire up your barbecue and your grill. Well, and as a matter of fact, keep in mind that restaurants are huge consumers of meat product, bulk meat products. So guess what? They're not buying the meat products because restaurants are closed right now. You see my point? So where's this meat going? I can tell you, I just bought large CryoVac tenderloins for $6 a pound. Tenderloin, beef tenderloins, $6 a pound, just a little over $6 a pound, because there is a surplus of meat in the food chain supply because the restaurants aren't eating it all and consuming it. Don't just get bought into the fear that there's going to be no more food. Any farmer that kills his livestock because there is less of a chance of him being able to sell it for a profit or what have you, that's one thing. But understanding that supply and demand, that in killing their livestock, they're killing their investment. I don't see any farms killing animals and livestock. There may be a glut right now on killing some chickens because the consumption of eggs has gone down dramatically. But chickens aren't, you know, they're not a life cycle that takes 3-4 years. I mean, they take about a year to reproduce. And they've got, they are so efficient in running and producing meat that they have the ability. How many times have you heard that the bird flu, the Asian bird flu, was it last year or 2 years ago? They killed millions. I mean, millions and millions of chickens. Did you see the price of chicken really go up that much? Considering how many chickens were killed, that's how many chickens are out there, my friends. There is a lot of meat being produced. There's a lot of chickens. And so when they're telling you these things, 9 times out of 10, this is all to perpetuate fear, because it's about control, because fear is a great emotion in controlling people. Anyway, back to the three largest meat producing conglomerates in the United States control more than 2/3 of the total meat and poultry supply of the United States. Now, supposedly, these three conglomerates have closed, or they have been closing their plants due to the workers tested with positive results on the coronavirus. However, GM Griffin points out that these tests that they are using produces more than an 80% false positive. In other words, these people that are, you know, sent home or furloughed because they can't work, you know, these people want to work, they want to make money, but it's the companies that actually make, they're the ones that are making the profits, not the people that are in there doing it. Anyway, as you understand, it's always the executives and the stockholders that are making the profits. So what I would say is watch the stocks. If you don't believe me, watch the stocks. Watch these meat packing, Tyson's or Smithfield's or whomever. Watch their stocks and see how much of a beating their stocks take, if they take any beating at all. And as a matter of fact, after all of this goes and this is all gone, watch what happens to the price of meat. Will it go up and stay up? Because it's all about supply and demand. And as these conglomerates, because it's almost like OPEC, these conglomerates are setting the price on, you know, what you pay for a pound of beef, a pound of chicken, and so forth. They're setting the price because if they can control how much is out there, then they actually increase demand. Supply and demand, right? If there's less supply and there's still a greater demand, then the prices go up. They make more money. The farmers make the same amount. And it's a very slow process of raising the price on the farmer's end. And it's a very quick process in reducing the price on the farmer's end. So that's exactly how these things work. So anyway, There's also an article that G. Edward Griffin released, and basically he was stating that an American rancher, Shad Sullivan, warns of upcoming meat shortages, plowing under crops. See, even G. Edward Griffin is regurgitating the same stuff, dumping of milk and euthanizing livestock. He says ranchers are being forced to euthanize harvest-ready cattle because employee absenteeism. I'm just here to tell you that that's not happening at the rate anybody would think, because, you know, when you look at one of those cows mean thousands of dollars of profit. It's not a penny a head that they make. I mean, they sell cows by the pound. And if you look at what you pay, go just call up a butcher shop if there's one open. If you can find a local meat processing where you can buy a hind quarter, a side, or a whole cow, where they'll actually cut that cow up to how you want, ask them how much it costs a pound. And if you're paying anything under $5, I'd be surprised. And I want you to think about that. You're paying $5 a pound. That's the average, but you only get so many tenderloins. I learned this a while ago, that if you really want to buy a lot of beef, just go buy the CreoVax instead of buying a hind quarter where you're stuck with more hamburger than you'll eat. Get the steak, get the roasts, get the cuts of meat that you want. Buy those, because 9 times out of 10, it's going to be cheaper for you to fill your freezer with that stuff. And then you'll actually have stuff that you want to eat, instead of watching the rest of that cow go to waste, get freezer damaged, or what have you. Anywho, the whole point is that this rancher is basically kind of creating or building upon this fear. The absenteeism is the result. This is supposedly, you know, this is again as G. Edward Griffin. The absenteeism is the result of the government stay-at-home campaigns. Meanwhile, supposedly, the meat that you are getting is lower quality meat and is being shipped from Namibia and overseas locations. Now, I don't like the fact that Clinton, Bush, and Obama opened up the doors. Actually, the Bushes first, George W. with the NAFTA, as well as Agenda 21, opened up the doors to allow America to become dependent on external farming. It was Bush Jr. that actually depleted. Go look at how much grain is in silage today. He depleted it back in 2008, 2009, 2010. And in 2010, when there was no more silage, no more corn, no more rice, no more wheat, it was all sold and put into the market or dumped into the market to help suppress the cost of food from going up too much. What ended up happening in 2011 was the Arab Spring. All of a sudden, the cost of food internationally went up because America wasn't dumping grain, because we had no more left. Now, I'm not a fan, and I don't believe that America should be. I believe it's the state's responsibility to actually, you know, pay for or to develop silage for their citizens. Whatever food, whatever the necessity should be, that really should be handled at a state level, and not at the U.S. level, not at the government or federal level. The state level is the appropriate place, and maybe even the county, because obviously some counties, and as a matter of fact, it would be smart if you did it by the county, because guess what? The greedy urban areas are going to suck up all the food, and they're going to demand their fair share and take it from you. Oh, well, you guys have your own little farms out there. Anyway, this is why republicanism and understanding republicanism is so important. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. And hopefully we'll have our interview with Alex Newman tomorrow.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.